alcohol-exposed pregnancy in high-risk women attending urban STD clinics. The final results presented by Heidi Hutton from Johns Hopkins.
And Karen Peterson.
And Karen, standing right behind her.
Okay, thanks. Good morning. Karen and I are going to describe our experience in implementing this program called Project Choices. Project Choices is so called because it's a program to reduce alcohol-exposed pregnancy, obviously among women, and it does so either by helping women reduce their alcohol use or increase their use of effective contraception. And this is a program that was initiated by CDC, the Division of Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities. And so that's what we'll be talking about today. Now, some of the background for the reason why the Project Choices, the CDC had the brilliant idea to move it to an STI clinic, is actually based on some research that we had done originally in Baltimore. So by background, at our STI clinic, we found that, and this is a statistic that holds up over time, that 30% of the women who come to STI care are drinking hazardously. And by that, we mean binge drinking, which at the time was defined as more than five or more drinks per episode for women. It's now four or more drinks for those of you who are keeping up on that, five or more drinks for men, and also exceeding more than seven drinks per week. So one drink a day is pretty safe for women. If you go above that limit on a daily limit over a week, that puts you in the hazardous drinking category. So what we found was that the women binge drinkers are more than twice as likely, and this is based on a sample of 350 women, so it's a good size sample, and they were more than twice as likely to have multiple sex partners, but interestingly, five times more likely to have a gonorrhea diagnosis. So we all know that drinking is a driver of risky behavior, and certainly all the more so in an STI clinic. Now, in another set of studies, we looked at alcohol use in pregnancy. And this was based on a six-year study. And we found that women presenting to the STI clinic, about 6.6% a year were coming in and were testing positive for pregnancy. Now, again, looking at the alcohol use, interestingly, about a third of the women knew they were pregnant and they were still drinking. And as we know, there is no safe limit on alcohol during pregnancy. So a third of them were drinking, and a third of the women who found out they were pregnant at the STI clinic also reported drinking, and the other ones weren't. So we have an STI clinic population that's at high risk for an alcohol-exposed pregnancy. In Baltimore, we see about 4,000 women between the ages of 18 and 44, which were the population that we studied at Project Choices. About 54% of our women admit, and I do say admit, report inconsistent or no contraceptive use. And 30%, again, we did another sort of pilot study, reported hazardous drinking. So based on those figures, as you merge the samples, we've estimated that about 10% were at risk for alcohol-exposed pregnancy, which is very high. So what is Choices Intervention? Again, as I said, this was initially funded by CDC to reduce alcohol-exposed pregnancies. The original intervention was four sessions. That's not going to work in an STI clinic. No way. We thought two was optimistic, and most of the women did return for a second session, but even that is sometimes optimistic. So it uses a motivational interviewing counseling style. I don't know how many of you are familiar with that, but it's a non-judgmental, menu-driven, you elicit information from the patient, you provide information as the patients or clients are willing to listen to it, and you set goals for behavior change. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. Importantly, it's manualized for the client and for the counselor. So as I said, for the STD clinic, we adapted it to two sessions. We did each of the sessions lasted about 20 minutes, and then we did two booster phone calls where we were variably successful in getting those phone calls through. We also made a lot of local cultural adaptations. So when you're trying to define for women, and I'm giving you a very brief overview of this intervention, but when you define for women what a standard drink is, a standard drink in Baltimore is very different from a standard drink in Denver, right? So in Baltimore, we drink a lot of malt liquor, which turns out to be the equivalent in those cans is about two standard drinks. So And then there's a lot of certain types of vodka and party drinks, and I don't know what Denver drinks, but they drink more than we do in Baltimore. 5 minutes. Okay, so I've got 5 minutes, and I want to leave 5 minutes for my colleague, but here's the content of the sessions. Look, we know how to change behavior. We've studied this. We know it's efficacious. We just got to get out there and do it. So this is a list of all the ways we know in which we can change behavior. So I'm just going to describe quickly that the clinics in Baltimore and Denver where we implemented this are very different. My clinic is largely, we have two STI clinics, well, I guess three, and then all other places provide services. But ours is located in a very difficult section of town. Most of the women are never married. It's largely African American and not well off. And Denver was very similar, except also socioeconomically disadvantaged, but much higher Hispanic population. So I'm going to turn it over to Karen now. All our materials are available on the CDC website. Let me just say that this Project Choices has been proven efficacious in an RCT that was conducted in a variety of settings, and we had good uptake also in the STI clinic.
All right. So this is group data for both clinics at the moment. So, and this was effectively really a 3 years of enrollment. Over 17,000 female visits conducted during the time, and about 10%, as we had anticipated, met all of the eligibility criteria, which really involved being heterosexually active and reproductively capable, essentially, so no hysterectomy, et cetera, and not using effective contraception, and drinking at these high-risk levels. Of those women, 480 enrolled. In other words, they said, yes, I'm interested in this intervention. 80% of them actually received an intervention session. And so there is some loss, and this is one of the big lessons, is that if you don't grab her while she is right there in your clinic, she almost never comes back. So unsurprisingly. So that's where most of this loss happened. If she said, well, I'm really interested, but I'm busy. Call me, or I'll call you, or, you know, almost never happened. Of the women who did receive an intervention session, about 60% actually received a family planning visit. This is another difference between our clinics in that Denver, as you just heard from Grace Alfonsi, has an integrated family planning program along with the STD program. So it was easier for us to get people into that. But Baltimore managed to get their STD clinic to start a quick start program with contraceptive where the nurses in the clinic could, in fact, give initial contraception and then refer to a family planning clinic, a Title 10 clinic, which is in the same building, though not in the same clinic space. So both of us had easy access to that for women. Of the women we reached for follow-up, we had 65% reduced alcohol-exposed pregnancy risk at 3 months and 70% at 6 months. I've broken out the drinking patterns a little bit. I'm not going to spend time because I only have 2 minutes. But you can see here that Baltimore and Denver actually were similar, a little different, but similar in that from our baseline, where everybody, of course, was drinking quite hazardously, and this is the line that says Denver drinks more. Women, you know, we don't have as many binges as Baltimore does, but when we binge, we binge. So, but in both cases, we did see it changing over time. And then use of effective contraception, of course, we start with nobody using it correctly, so we shoot up considerably. Denver is the line that comes down a little bit, and that will relate to a couple of my last points. I split out our outcomes because I want to be fair to Baltimore. Baltimore did better than Denver did, and one reason is that they had an excellent interventionist who really had good fidelity to the intervention. Ours didn't as much. I don't want to emphasize too much the negative there, though, because if you look at Denver, you can see the women who were at high risk still are in the red. Everybody else, either by using contraception effectively or reducing drinking or both, had dropped out of the high-risk group. And again, this was 100% when we started, and we've had that much improvement in a difficult population. So we're actually very pleased and excited about that. When you look at Baltimore, though, it looks even better. And again, I want to give them credit for that because we slightly diluted. That included over time. So we do think this is a very, not only effective, but it is implementable in this setting. And we took a number of women who were at high risk that we ended up having moving to lower risk. We did have some pregnancies at both sites, and unfortunately some of them were alcohol exposed. The women quite honestly said, I'm still drinking, you know, I'm still binging, et cetera, while I'm pregnant. But we also had women who again started that way, and they went to zero drinks. All right, I am being told we're at the end. So, last slide, real quickly. So it's efficacious in trials, randomized controlled trials. It's also now been shown to be effective in the world of STD. It's robust. That's part of what the difference in our outcomes shows. We still had good outcomes. They had excellent outcomes, despite some intervention drift. And so we'd like to encourage you all to think about this as a high-risk population that you can effectively intervene with on a reproductive health issue.
For one question. No, we have one.
So recently there's been an incredible increase in the use of prescription opioids, particularly among, you know, all, but also women of reproductive age. And what they found out in the state of Tennessee is that those women have a higher risk of having an unintended pregnancy or not having appropriate contraception. So I wonder if you could talk about that in the spectrum of your choices project.
Yeah. We did not specifically address that. This really was about alcohol. I will say, though, that conceptually it should be something that could be used there because, again, what the focus for women was, if you want a healthy pregnancy, here's some information about healthy pregnancy. That includes not drinking while you're pregnant. Then you have options about how to do that, either delay pregnancy or change the behavior that's unhealthy. And so I think that absolutely could be adaptable to the opioids.
Just make one other point. This is not a program for women who are alcohol dependent.
Right.
Or dependent on pills. That wouldn't be appropriate for a whole lot of reasons. But for people for whom information and exchange of ideas and goal setting, so they're in more of the hazardous range of use of pills or alcohol, I think the choices could be easily adapted for non-prescription use of opioids.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.